This is Everything is Workable, a podcast where we examine how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. I'm your host, Caitlin Hatch, creative polymath and dedicated consumer of wisdom. This is the third season of Everything is Workable, and it's going to be a bit different. The workability of life is something anyone can recognize, regardless of your system of belief or background or upbringing. To illustrate this, I've been connecting with ordinary people to talk about their approach to life and practice as a way of giving you more tools for working with your mind. If you have a guest suggestion or you'd like to be a guest yourself, you can get in touch with me through my website. I've included the link in the show description. Also, a bit of housekeeping, if you will. I do this entirely through my own effort and the financial support of my wife, who is my greatest and only patron. There are a lot of costs involved, from hosting fees to the equipment that I use to a monthly subscription for the sound editing program. If you enjoy this podcast, you can help out by contributing to some of the running costs. There are details when you visit my website, www.caitlinschatch.com. It also helps immensely when you share episodes that you've enjoyed. I created this podcast as a way to show my gratitude for my teachers. My ultimate intention with it is to help us all become better people, more caring, kind, compassionate, which in a society where we put more value on your earning power than we do on your character, is a really radical act. So please, if this or any other episode speaks to you, share it with the people in your life. Let's kick off season three. Today's episode is with David Mariano, husband, father, and investment banker. Yes. Investment banker, but he's unlike what we might think of when it comes to someone dealing in finance. David and I had a delightful interfaith dialogue about cultivating self-awareness, he as a Christian and me as a Buddhist. In this episode, we discuss self-awareness, the application of our practice in the day-to-day, including what ethical business looks like, and David shares the tools he uses and offers resources to anyone, but especially those seeking to create change from within a corporate setting. And now, on with the show.
How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Fantastic.
Good.
Cool. So, I don't know how familiar you are with Buddhism.
A little bit.
So, a very common thing I hear when going to retreats and listening to questions that students ask when I listen to podcasts and talks, recordings of talks, is people are like, oh, well, it's all very well and good to teach us how to do this in a retreat, but how do we go and apply it in our life? Mm-hmm. And I've never had that problem, and I don't quite get that problem, because to me, that's like going, oh, I took this course on painting. How could I possibly paint at home? So I'm kind of like, well,
right.
Well, if you learn something, you learn how to develop that skill and you apply it and you try it out. And I find that comes really naturally to me. So in creating Everything is Workable, that's what I'm trying to address, is the people who are kind of like, I've learned this great thing, I've been to this amazing retreat, or I've read this fantastic book, but the application is kind of where people get hung up. And
okay.
So what I'm looking for is people who want to speak to how they have applied things in their lives and how it's really helped and improved their life.
Okay.
Well, and
being honest too, and I assume you'll appreciate this. I mean, I don't by any means think I'm an expert in this. It's just something that I'm conscious enough to care about and attempt.
Yeah.
I'm happy to share what I do and what has worked or what I struggle with. I'm pretty open with that stuff. So cool. As long as you're okay with that, I don't think I'm a self-awareness master by any means.
Well, you know, though, that's the kind of thing I want to hear, because that is exactly the approach that I take with it. Is I'm like, okay, you can say you're an expert, but show me you're an expert. Like, I want to see how you live it, not how you talk it.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, it's very different. Cool. Okay, perfect. So, right. So talking about self-awareness, obviously I come from it from a very Buddhist approach, and it's a key part of Buddhist practice. But another thing that I try to do for my listeners with Everything is Workable is really emphasize that this isn't about following a very specific path. It's about figuring out your path.
Yep.
If you could speak a little bit to your approach of self-awareness, what does self-awareness mean to you, I guess, first of all? I think that's a good starting point, because for some people, that can be a sticking point. Like, what do you mean to be self-aware?
I think there are many elements to it, but two that come to mind most importantly are the need to know yourself better as you currently stand, so you can grow into whoever you want to become or whoever you think you are made to be. You know, I'm sure people are coming from very different backgrounds and very different belief systems and what that could be. But I think to grow, and if you, assuming you want to grow, you need to know where you are and have some sense of who you are. Mm-hmm. I think the other element that's just as important is how that impacts other people, though. And I think that's a huge element of self-awareness, is just whether it's interpersonal relationships, my relationship with my wife, my relationship with my kids, my relationship with my parents, coworkers. I think relationships are much richer if you have the willingness and ability to look at yourself and how you're contributing to that relationship.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, because I find myself having conversations with people often about, like, they say, well, I'm just one person, what can I do? And I really take the approach of, yeah, but you're part of it. You're not separate from it. We're all interconnected.
Right.
So if you work on your stuff and you own your stuff and you appreciate the impact that has on the people around you, understand that it does have an impact on people around you.
Oh, absolutely.
So what's your experience then of approaching your life from the viewpoint of having self-awareness? Like, do you actually, I guess, first of all, really, how did you come about realizing the importance of cultivating self-awareness?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. I probably admittedly came at it from the wrong spot. If I'm being honest, my guess is, and I don't know when it started, I would have to really think back, but my guess is it probably came from an unhealthy thought of, I wish that person was more self-aware of themselves.
Right.
But through that, thankfully, I do care enough about working on myself that I realized through conversations with other people that posture itself was a point of being too judgmental. So, but what it did lead me to is, okay, if I expect that from other people, if I would prefer that person would really know how they were impacting me, well, I have to care enough to understand that about myself too.
Yeah.
So that's really, I think that's where it came from. I wish I could say it had some better motive, but that's probably where it came from initially.
I know that's true for me. Definitely. I spend so much time reading, like, you know, I read lots of Dharma and I study lots of stuff, and I would think, oh, if so-and-so would just apply this, or if so-and-so just did this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it definitely, that's exactly. So I read a lot of leadership and business books, and it's the same thing. I mean, you know, just how you treat people, how you get the best set of people, how you run a great team. There are so many good things out there about that. And when you see, and when you're conscious of it and care about personal relationships and your own feelings and emotions, and you see other people not using the things that you know are right, right?
Yeah.
It's so easy to say, oh, I wish that person would do this.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, of course, you realize, I guess it's that realization that you can't change other people. And we get told that all the time, right? Like, you can't change other people, but we don't really seem to believe it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a daily battle to kind of come back to center and realize, like, I can really only affect me and mm-hmm. my reaction to that person and how I interact with other people.
So what are the things that you do to do that? Like, how do you cultivate that self-awareness in your day-to-day, and how do you catch yourself in that judgmental place of, like, they need to be different in order for me to?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, it's a daily battle, I would say. I have a Christian background, but I do have a daily practice of, you know, getting up in the morning, praying, reading the Bible, and journaling. And so in my journaling time is often when I try to be honest with myself about mm-hmm. what I'm feeling and explore those things. That's something I try to do every day. I try to be pretty, it's hard, and maybe it's even different as a guy, but I have to force myself to talk about those things with mm-hmm. my wife sometimes, just to sometimes when I say it out loud, it either reveals something to me directly or she can help me process that stuff.
Yeah.
And then I've been to counseling too. I mean, that's something I've done in the past, that those relationships can help you think through thoughts. And I think in general, just being in a relationship with people really helps you understand yourself if you're willing to share and be honest about your feelings. And then another spot is my kids. I don't know if you have kids at all, but it's really amazing. Okay. It's really amazing when there's this little human that you were a part of creating that you start to see yourself in them, good and bad. And it's really revealing. And sometimes it's almost frustrating when I can see myself getting frustrated at my son, who's 3.5. I have a daughter who's a little bit younger and easier in some ways to deal with than a toddler. But dealing with my son sometimes, I can feel myself getting frustrated at him. But then I think about it later and I realize how similar we are.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do I deal with that, number one, so I'm not getting impatient or frustrated with him? But it's really also like, how can I not like that about him or get frustrated with that about him when that's me? You know, it's really, so it gets a little heady, but yeah, those are some of the things that happen on a daily, weekly basis that help.
Okay. So that's a really fantastic starting point. And for that self-awareness is how you use other people as a mirror. And I think that's what you described on your website, was something about like using other people to reflect back on you where you have growing points.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's not easy to do. I know, like, from my personal experience, I'm still very much working on it. And it's something that I have developed a lot of awareness around, is when I feel defensive, that's on me. And it, for me, defensiveness is now something where I'm like, ooh, interesting. I feel defensive. What is it that I'm trying to protect?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really appreciate how you're talking about, first of all, being really authentic with your wife and being open to feedback. But then when it comes to kids, they say the craziest things, right? They have no filter. So they become like your little gurus without you even asking for it. So how, like, what is it about yourself? Like, what sort of awareness things do you tap into within your body that's going on, or within your mind and your process, so that you do create that sort of sense of like, this isn't about them, this is about me, this is something I get to work on?
Honestly, that's a struggle. I don't know if I've figured that out. Mm-hmm. Other than and it's harder to at certain moments, right? When you're under stress or under pressure, if the day was challenging, I think it's harder to, you know, make change and either behave differently or think differently or feel differently. I don't know if I've figured that part out, but I guess when I am in a better mindset and able to even be aware that that stuff's happening, is just trying to slow down, I guess, slow down my reaction. This is definitely something I'm right in the middle of, just, you know, really trying to figure out how to be better at this, but, you know, taking whatever those thoughts are and try to almost push it aside, not to ignore it, but to not let it influence my reaction or my behavior, which it's difficult. It's hard to talk about it, though. Like,
it is.
It's kind of off in my brain, right?
Well, I guess it's skirting that fine line between repressing something where you're like, well, that's not helpful.
Yeah.
And then actually refraining from something. It's like the practice of refraining. It's a hard practice. It really is. So you mentioned your routine. This, like, you have a morning routine, and part of that is prayer. Could you speak a little bit to that and how that helps you and influences how you live your life?
Yeah, and it's something that I definitely don't do enough of, admittedly, but it absolutely helps me. I mean, especially in the – I know this isn't the whole conversation, but on the judgment side, or the – any of the negative feelings, I'd say the judgment side, the fear side, the any self-doubt, I think for me it helps just to actually – acknowledge those things and ask God to take them away. In the Christian background, that's the role almost. That's the God I pray to, is that he can take those things away. Mm-hmm. That honestly, I have some control over it, but I'm wired a certain way, and some of those things are great, some of those things are not so great, but I ask for help with those things. With, like, I know I'm judgmental, and I can't, most of the time I can't control it. And so help take those things away. And when I've done that more regularly, it's definitely helped. I don't know what that magic is. I mean, like, yeah. I believe in a God, but honestly, that stuff's hard to believe in even for me. And so but it is amazing, the power of prayer and just being really specific about asking for help and being honest about, like, I feel powerless over this issue.
Yeah. It's something because obviously from the Buddhist point of view, it's a non-theistic religion, mm-hmm. but there is still very much that sense of understanding that you're not in it alone.
Yeah.
My understanding when I talk to people who have a belief system that they really apply in their life, that's exactly what it is. They're like, I don't want to do this alone because I can't. No one can. And because we aren't mm-hmm. alone, right? Like I already said, you're really interconnected. You've got relationships and they matter.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's something comforting about that. And I think it's powerful, however it works.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely is. So could you speak a little bit then to your routine and how you find routine is an important aspect of being able to cultivate self-awareness?
So the routine for me is it's a centering type of practice where I don't know, again, it's one of those things, I don't know how it works, but I know that when I don't do it, I have my day is just different. So when I can wake up and try to clear my mind first through just breathing and trying to just be there, be present, and then write down, I go back and forth what I do first, but sometimes I may just write some things down first, what's on my mind, what may have happened from the day before. I definitely have done I'm not doing it actively right now, but, you know, a gratitude practice of just, what am I thankful for, especially when things are tough, you know, what am I thankful for in my work, my job, my family, my relationships, whatever. I do work in an element of scripture with that to read that and try to observe something in it and then make a decision on how I will use that today or how I could put that into action and then pray about that. I usually end in some sort of prayer over that and or some specific issue I'm dealing with. Doing that just tends to, when I do it well or, you know, when it works out, is it's just kind of calming and I feel like I can prioritize better. I feel like I appreciate what's important, or I can see priorities clearly, more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's honestly one of my biggest struggles, is I have a lot going on work-wise, side project. My wife has side things going on. We have kids, we have other friends, and just figuring out how to get it all done is one of the things that is hard. But when I feel like that's easier when you can have some sort of foundation in the morning where you get back to what's important, you focus on your priorities and then make decisions out of that.
Yeah. It's that good, clear space to start from. Cause I have a solid morning routine and it involves 20 minutes of meditation. And like, I feel it, like, you know, I miss it one day and mm-hmm. there's this lack in focus in my day. And I don't necessarily have a routine around the Dharma that I read. I just read Dharma every day. I usually have a few books going at once. But I, just to speak a little bit to your use of scripture, because that is one of those things where I find it so helpful when I read something and I might read just one statement that resonates with me. And I don't know why it resonates with me, but because it does, I just contemplate it a lot. So if you could just talk a little bit about when you find a piece of scripture that speaks to you, how do you work with that? Like, how do you go about integrating it into your day. How do you turn it from something that you've read on the paper where you've been like, this is amazing, to an action?
That's a good question. You know, some days that's better than others. And it, you know, in the Bible, sometimes there are pieces that I have a hard time figuring out, you know, how do I even put this into action? But if there is, those are the days where I try to actually do that. So I'm just looking back in my journal right now, some recent Saturday, it was something about, let's see, like Jesus, oh, knowing that people would disown him, but at the same time, he knew that they would disown him, knew they would reject him, but at the same time, he still loved and forgave them. So I took that day and say, okay, number one, if he can do that, I should be able to forgive people. So be aware today of a moment where I don't want to forgive someone and do it anyway. Because number one, I know it's healthy. And number two, that's what, you know, that's what I'm also told to do. And at the same time, on the directly to Jesus side, I said, I need to know that I'm also forgiven too. If he was able to forgive people that ahead of time he knew would betray him, who were his closest friends, then I know that I can be forgiven if I screw up too, right? So that's the other side. It's not beating yourself up too much and knowing that you're forgiven, that we all make mistakes, that we're all human. So that on that particular day, that's how I used it. And not every day is that straightforward, but I try to do something like that, really try to get something out of it that I can do that day. And I didn't make this up, but recently, within the last few months, I heard a pastor say there's this, I don't know, it's called an acrostic, right? The acronym where you were used the letters, it spells something out.
Right. Yep.
So it was SOAP, and S stands for scripture. And it just, you kind of, you know, write down whatever passage you're in. O stands for observe, something you've directly observed out of that. It doesn't have to be writing it down. A is action, and then the P is prayer. So that I've been using that little framework that I heard just very recently to go through stuff, and it's been really kind of cool. Really work hard to, when you read something, put an action to it, or, you know, conclude what your action will be that day as a result of it, and then pray about either seeing opportunities that day or praying that you can actually have the courage to do it, whatever it would be that day. So that's what I've been doing lately.
That's really, really brilliant. Those sorts of acronyms are really great because they make it easy to remember. Like, it's something that can stick in your brain. You're like, oh, this is a really easy thing to follow. Because I just have to remember the acronym, and then I remember the steps.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of looking for it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. I just realized, I was like, oh, that just made me think of an acronym, which unfortunately I'm not going to remember now. it's the FEAR acronym, which is, hold on, it's feel where it is in your body. Yep. Feel where it is. What's the E? FEAR. I can't remember what the E is. I know A is allow the thoughts to go.
Yep.
And then R is remember you're not the only one. I think E, because I feel like F and E kind of go together. So it's feel where it is in your body. And I think it's also experience it in your body without without letting it run away, without letting it take it away from you. And then, allow the thoughts around it to go and remember you're not alone. They're fun tools to have.
Especially when they're short and simple. I think they're easier to use when they're short and simple. If it was a 7 or 8-letter word, it'd be a little harder.
Yeah. What's really nice about it as well, when you get something like that from, like, you heard that from your preacher or from a preacher that you?
Yeah, it was honestly a podcast, a different thing I was listening to. I don't remember what it was, but it was, it just stuck with me that day for some reason.
Yeah. Again, coming from the Buddhist background, but then also coming from being raised by a very scientific father, I have this really important approach of not accepting things on blind faith and really examining the source of the information. And when you get something like that, that always says to me, like, that speaks to me very much how the person who's sharing it understands the application. Like, they understand you need to have a system to apply it. It's not enough just to say, here's some scripture. You have to say, here's some scripture, and here's how you use it in your life.
Yeah, just having the knowledge isn't enough, right? I mean, it's like anything else, having the knowledge about, you could read about how to podcast, you could read about this or that, but if you don't try it, then you don't really learn. It doesn't really become a part of you. It's a challenging thing, especially for someone like me. I love to learn. I love to read, and it's very easy just to read and consume without putting into practice. Mm. It's a discipline that I have to force myself to try to stick to.
Yeah. Does routine help you then with having a sense of discipline?
It does, definitely in that area. In other areas, it feels a little more constrictive, I guess, but I'm learning to accept some of those areas too. Definitely in the morning, the discipline has helped me.
So how do you go about creating discipline in your life? If that's not too big of a question.
No, yeah, it's definitely tough, especially with conflicting schedules and
kids.
kids and even the work I do is very unpredictable, and that's the reason a lot of people like it, and so it can be exciting. So it is hard to really be disciplined on certain things, but I think it's just making it a priority that certain times of the day are sacred. And this is something I haven't done a good job of lately, and I know it. But even a few times this week, I realized during lunch I had some time. I was eating alone this time. I have a lot of business lunches too, but on the days that I eat alone, it really helps me to just get out of the office and walk around, right? Mm. But for whatever reason, twice this week I stayed here and I just kept working, and it was fine, but I know when I do that, my afternoon is better. So I don't know how to – I don't always know how to fix that, but I think doing your best to just force yourself to hold certain parts sacred. And right now, my morning, I'm doing a pretty good job with my morning. Hmm. Lunches, the afternoon walk, I haven't been as good with, but it probably starts with that morning routine again and reminding yourself, you know, what parts of today will I hold sacred, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean, even the fact that you notice it.
Yeah.
Step one. Exactly. you're already doing really well just to notice it. So could you speak a little bit about what it is that you do then for work and how you integrate your self-awareness practice and your routine into what you do?
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So I have a, you know, day job that I work with. We work with companies, business owners to help them grow. We help companies raise capital if they're growing, and we also sell businesses and help companies acquire other businesses. So it's definitely a financially driven industry. So I'm probably the weirdo here, which is fine with me.
That's good.
I think it is. It's tough, but it's also a good thing. Hmm. So I think that's why I do have to work hard to keep my morning routine at least and hold certain parts of the day sacred. Like I said, lunches I haven't been as good with, but I do get out of here to eat with my family, assuming I'm not traveling, because that is my priority. My family is my priority. So throughout the day, it can be a little more challenging, but I do have my journal with me the whole time. Sometimes I'll sit down and just write a few things down if I'm, you know, if I'm feeling stressed out, if I'm having a hard time making sense of things. But that's something I should do more of too. But I'm working on it.
Yeah. Journaling is a very powerful practice. I know for me, it's been really essential through so much of my life and since a very early age. What is it that you find is so effective about journaling?
I think it's just the spot where you can be totally honest and totally disorganized and scatterbrained. I haven't been doing it as long as you. I've probably picked it up 5 years ago or so. Okay. And I can't imagine how confused I'd be if I didn't do it at this point, because it just sometimes helps just to get a bunch of scribbled words on the page and just write things down and write things with exclamation points and just get it out of my head.
Yeah.
I definitely write a lot of the prayer stuff down. I write to God because I don't know why. I tend to write that communication down when it's, I wish this or I want that. Here's what I'm struggling with. Here's how I'm feeling, asking for things. I tend to just write that stuff down. And I think it's just freeing. It's a spot you can do that and not worry about spelling or grammar or anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I talk to some people who tell me like, oh, I'd like to journal, but my writing's too messy, or I don't know how I should go about it, or like I can't write really well. I'm like, it's not about writing well. Some of my journal entries, I go back, I'm like, I don't even know what that word is. I can't actually read
it. Oh, yeah. Oh, my handwriting is terrible. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's pretty much how I do it.
Yeah.
I probably should separate that from how I try to write in other places, because it's much easier. I think it's easier to just get stuff out of your head. That's for me anyway, it's much easier to just dump it out on the page and not worry when I don't know who's reading it, or when I don't worry about anyone reading it and I know it's just me.
Yeah.
I think it's easier to get that stuff out.
Yeah. Well, that's really good. So I really like to speak to the professional use, because I think that's the thing with a lot of spiritual practice is people think of it as something that happens only in what they designate as spiritual spaces. So as a Buddhist practitioner, I hear people all the time say, oh, it's all very well and good to meditate on retreat, but how do I use this in my life? And I'm kind of like, well, just use it in your life. I don't know. That's the fun. You get to figure that out. And the very practical approach. So especially in business, and especially you have a business, you're in a business that is, like you said, it's very finance focused, and there is a huge separation, and it's the sad side effect of capitalism is that it all becomes about money being the bottom line. Which I think is so short-sighted.
Yep.
And what speaks to that is what we're facing right now as a world community with climate change and the effect that's having, and it's really damaging, and it's because of this short-term bottom line, let's make sure the investors are happy. There was a New Yorker cartoon I absolutely love. It's a picture of a man in a business suit sitting around a fire with some other people, and they all look really rough, and behind them there's like mushroom clouds and fire and everything. And he says, before we brought around the end of the world, our stakeholders were really happy.
Right.
So do you sometimes feel like, how do you work with frustration around that short-sightedness that you encounter in your day?
It's definitely tough. I don't know. Are you familiar with conscious capitalism by any chance?
I've very, very vaguely, actually. I only recently heard about it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's a consciouscapitalism.org. I think it's a not-for-profit, but there's also a book. It was written by John Mackey and Raj Sisodia. John Mackey's the founder of Whole Foods.
Okay.
And so it's a good, I would definitely, if you're interested in business and that side of things, it's awesome. It is, I think it is the answer. I think it is the solution to a lot of what you just described. I mean, it's a multi-stakeholder model that says all stakeholders are important, and they even have data. It's not just that book, but there's another book called Firms of Endearment, who they were both involved in that as well, that proves that the companies that have that multi-stakeholder model that aren't just focused on the shareholders alone have done better. And always, right? Employees are happier, customers are happier, profits are higher, they're better for the environment, they're better for the community. And it's just, it's really cool. I mean, it should be the future anyway. And hopefully, you know, it seems like things are changing. I see it anyway. I mean, maybe because I'm involved in like this online community and podcasts and kind of smaller entrepreneurs that are able and willing to do that. But I see it culturally changing, albeit slow, and maybe in little pockets. But so that's at least what gives me hope. I would say that people are doing it, that there are models out there that prove that you can do good and do well at the same time. So that gives me hope. Being honest, it does get frustrating at times, though, when you know, maybe I would make a decision a certain way and someone else might do it differently. But I just, at the same time, I know we're in a world that nothing, we can't expect utopia either.
Yeah.
Right? That people have been greedy, angry, murdering bad people forever, right? You look way back in history and it's not like these problems are new.
Yeah.
They're manifested in our world today. And sometimes it seems like it's worse or it's better. But I think human nature probably hasn't changed at all. It just gets shown in different ways. So acknowledging that, it's how do I be a positive influence as much as I possibly can while not crushing my own spirit?
Yeah.
and that's hard. It really is. And I've gone through periods of ups and downs with that where, should I, you know, do something else? Should I, whatever. And quite honestly, I'm back in the role I am right now, partially because of that. I left where I am right now to go do something different for a few years. And I came back about 4 years ago, and it wasn't the outwardly stated reason to everyone, but to my wife and people who are closest to me, I came back here partially to forgive and be a more positive influence as opposed to just fleeing.
Right. Yeah.
Or escaping, which sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes you have to do that to protect yourself and heal. But I was at a spot where I said, you know what? I feel like I can be a positive influence. I can make a difference. At least I'm willing to try.
Mm.
And so that's kind of where I am right now. And, you know, who knows what happens long term, but that's how I kind of deal with it at this point.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Because that's really, you're just going, I'm going to take care of my little patch. And I know if other people see how my little patch flourishes, they might do the same in their little patch. And that's all I can do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That reminds me of, there's a story of Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. He was Pema Chodron's primary teacher, and she talks about him having an argument with Allen Ginsberg, where Allen Ginsberg is all like protesting something, and Chogyam Trungpa says to him, if you want to change the system, go get hired at the factory. If you're really against the factory and the waste they're producing, like, go get a job there, find out what it's like, understand their reality and work on it from the inside, right? Like, from the outside, it is, and sometimes you're right. Sometimes you do have to extract yourself from a situation because it's just that toxic. But
right.
If you're going into it from a confident point of view that you're going to take care of your patch in it and you're going to work on yourself within it, that can be really, really powerful and is the only way, right? Because you have to understand, like, why does someone work in a particular industry, and it is a very human nature thing. We just want to be happy, and so many people equate money with happiness. So understand that when someone's going for the right. bottom line, they're not going for the destruction of the environment. They're going for, I want to feel safe and content and secure and have enough.
Right.
So you sort of answered this. It's kind of my final question about who are some influential teachers or some books or a podcast that you'd recommend. So you've mentioned a few books, which is great. Is there anything else? Like, I give this to you as like your signposting. So anyone who's listened to this and gone, wow, this is brilliant, what kind of signposting would you say, like, go read this or listen to this or find out more about this person?
Yeah, so many influences, honestly. I mean, I mentioned Conscious Capitalism, Firms of Endearment. As far as like the business, that conscious business movement, I think those are two great spots to start, especially for, you know, I've told, I won't mention names, but I've told certain people in my personal life that are very against, you know, big business, and they have this like visceral reaction to anything that's company related, and while at the same time being a consumer, right? We all are. So you have to kind of like it for some reasons. But, you know, anyone that has that doesn't feel that there's hope out there for business and where we are in the economy and just that type of stuff, read those too, because they might give you some hope or give you some ideas that there are some people out there trying to do the right thing, and maybe there are some things that you can use as well. Since I am in business and I love leadership, not just in business, but also just in our personal lives, our families, our whatever other organizations we're a part of. I think Leading at a Higher Level by Ken Blanchard is one of the best leadership books I've ever read. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a great framework, and it has some great principles and some stories in there about how leadership can really work, where it's about servant leadership. And I think that's the best way to go. It also goes against a lot of what's out there in the regular economy today, and fits along with the conscious capitalism thing. So no surprise that I like that book. And then just one, which is an amazing, probably no surprise to people listening to a podcast, but Seth Godin's Linchpin is still one of my most favorite books as a leader and as an employee, a professional, as someone who's producing things. It really does a good job of talking about both sides of the coin, about how to be indispensable, but what to do with indispensable people, how to get the best out of people, and how to get the best out of yourself. He's definitely been one of my biggest influences in life, and how I work, how I think about myself, and what I believe is possible.
Yeah. Fantastic. That was really brilliant. Thank you so much. This has been delightful.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
I'd like to thank David for taking the time to chat with me, and to thank you as well for listening to the show. If you've enjoyed this or any other episode, please help promote this podcast by sharing it through social media. You can find out more about what I do through my website and by signing up to get my monthly wrap-up email, which will include links to the latest episodes of Everything is Workable once a month. Thank you as well to Dexter Britton for composing the fantastic music accompanying this and the previous two seasons of Everything is Workable.